is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine, the crisis is at hand. The headlines from Europe, tanks seen moving through city of Donetsk, NATO holding press conferences, the world reacting to Vladimir Putin's speech of some hours past, asking the question, incursion, invasion. The answer seems to be uniformly invasion. In Germany, in France, in Britain, reaction by the leadership. However, it is 100 years since my flagship, WOR, 710 AM in New York City, started broadcasting the news to America. And in those 100 years, there have been several wars. I won't even count them now. War starts are always ragged and unclear. It's the fog of war. Right now, we're in the fog of war and the fog of diplomacy. So a helpful measure to reflect back upon these 100 years and what to watch for is how the markets react, how money moves when there is uncertainty. I welcome Liz Peek of The Hill, of Fox News, much on Fox Business, here to begin the second 100 years of WOR, bringing the best news we can find about tomorrow. Liz, a very good evening to you. The markets are, at this point, stagger-stepping. Energy is strong. However, at this point, we cannot say there's a crash. We can say there was weeks of preparation, anticipation of this. How do you measure the markets for the war start, if that's what it is, compared to how the markets have been responding to the inflation start that we've had these last months? Can we separate out these two parts? Good evening to you, Liz.
Good evening. Well, I think that's a really interesting question. The answer is probably not with any degree of certainty, but we've seen things like gold, for example, go up in price. That has always been a safe haven. And yes, it's been long considered a refuge when there's inflation on the forefront. But I think right now it's sort of a store of value concept that's driving gold higher. Obviously, oil prices are up. Frankly, not as much as many people might have expected, given the likelihood of some sanctions dinging Russian oil production, but more on that in a moment. But, you know, clearly we've had a big, big change in anticipation and of how the Fed is going to manage our money supply going forward. I mean, that is the big drama. It's really been underway for about 6 months. It has been slow to really impact stocks, but then it did. As the 10-year yield got up over 2% this past week, people finally began to take seriously, and the Fed minutes came out, that the idea that the Fed really was going to be ratcheting up interest rates. It is really always amazing to me how long something like that takes to filter into everyone's expectations. But clearly now the expectation is that the loose monetary policy of the last couple of years, or several years, has now gone, is now over. Interest rates are going to be going up. And so the question is, John, I think the central question, putting aside Russia for a moment, is the Fed likely to get it right? And there's an awful lot of disagreement on this. Will the Fed overreact, hike rates much too quickly? We've seen a real change in the Fed's attitude. They were much too behind the curve for months and months. You and I talked about it. Very slow to react to what a lot of people thought was pretty obvious indications that inflation was taking hold, taking root in important ways like the developing wage price spiral that you and I've talked about, where workers demand wage hikes because their cost of living is going up. And then, of course, companies have to raise their prices to accommodate those wage hikes. That's going on. And I think the Fed took much too long to see it and much too long to react to month by month increasing CPI numbers and the deflator numbers that they like better. The truth is inflation numbers have been going up steadily for months and months, and now finally the Fed is reacting. So we've gone from Wall Street, as it always does, jumping ahead. Wall Street, you know, initially was like, okay, maybe we'll get one or two hikes, rate hikes in 2022. Now some banks are calling for 7 rate hikes. Well, the Fed has not done a great job of signaling aggressive tactics like that until their minutes came out. And I think people did read the latest meeting minutes as being more concerned, more ready to move rapidly And so we can all speculate about why it took them so long. Really, there's no point in that. But the reality is now they are definitely going to be addressing this through rate hikes and, by the way, stopping their bond purchasing program, which honestly, for the life of me, I cannot understand why it's still going on. They should have stopped it 4 or 5 months ago, but they didn't. And now that's going to happen. So that's the question. Will they get it right? Will they overreact? Is the pretty good growth that we're seeing now in consumer spending likely to continue, or eventually are consumers going to be so alarmed by rising prices that they begin to retrench? That's really the issue.
What the U.S. and Europe have in common during this war start, if that's what it is energy prices. I read from the Wall Street Journal, oil approaches $100 on threat. Natural gas prices surged in Europe after Germany halted the Nord Stream 2 pipeline in response to Russian aggression. Prices for aluminum, nickel, and wheat also rose. From Germany, we learned that they already have tipped into what they can regard as a recession. They're concerned about their producer price index rising. I think I saw the number 25%. And in other words, it's overwhelming for a manufacturing country. And that is the center of European Union. So let's concentrate on energy, because I don't know the aluminum and nickel story. Can the U.S. supply the energy that Europe needs to recover, given that we can presume that Russia will not be generous with its natural gas with Nord Stream 2 shut down?
Well, the short answer is no, we can't. We're max producing right now. And yes, we are seeing an increase in the rig count. There will be increasing production. I think I've seen an estimate that over the next 12 months, we might be up as much as 200,000 or 300,000 barrels a day in terms of oil. Obviously, the gas situation is different because that really depends on our ability to ship export LNG. And again, I think we're maxed out in terms of having the infrastructure, the ports and the tankers and simply the facilities available. But John, in the last 2 weeks, let's think this through. What have we seen from the Biden administration on energy production? First of all, they empowered FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to make it more difficult to build natural gas pipelines. I'm literally sputtering because I could not believe that in this period where pretty much everyone agrees that we need to increase domestic oil and natural gas output to offset what's going on around the world and help what's going around the world, we are making it more difficult to transport natural gas in our country, which backs up into making it more difficult to invest in natural gas. It's an incredibly stupid decision. And at the same time, there was a freeze on all offshore federal land leasing just last week because of various regulatory and legal issues that came up. This administration, I mean, it's really kind of amazing. They have not gotten the message that the United States is a swing producer. In effect, over the next couple of years, we could have a big impact, as we did just 2 years ago, on the price of oil. But they refuse to acknowledge that. They refuse to accommodate or encourage that, because there is this, it's a little bit like, to me, the analogy is in Germany, why are they dependent on Russian energy? Because the Green Party is critical to forming a coalition government, and they basically they're punching way above their weight. The same thing is true with climate zealots in our country. They are going to be costing Americans, they already are costing Americans, much higher energy prices, much higher gasoline prices, because they simply are pushing climate policies that are unrealistic that lead to those higher prices. So it's very defeating to me that that American policymakers are not connecting the dots to why does Putin have such power? Because he controls energy. Why should America? Why will America never have another country exert such power over us? Because we control our own domestic energy. But remember, it wasn't that long ago in the 1970s, OPEC controlled our energy. Right. And they had enormous power. So is someone going to maybe break through this climate idiocy and acknowledge that, yes, we care about the planet. We also care about people being able to eat and drive their cars.
The word is boomflation. James Pethakoukas of AEI writes about the idea that we will grow as our GDP shows we are growing. At the same time, inflation will grow, eating up, if not most of, perhaps all of, the wage price rise. Is boomflation something we've dealt with before, Liz? I remember stagflation from the 20th century. Is this phenomenon new?
Well, you would sort of imagine that, generally speaking, it's rapid growth, rapid money supply increases that leads to too much money chasing too few goods. And so, yes, we've seen this before. Actually, the growth rate, I mean, I went back and looked at that whole period that Jimmy Carter was president. We were growing pretty well, and then inflation hit. And basically, and which, you know, Paul Volcker came in and raised interest rates so radically that the economy went into recession. But it is it would be extremely unusual to have no growth and inflation. Usually the opposite is true. So now, again, as I said earlier, the question is, can the Fed get it so right that they don't stop U.S. growth in its tracks in their efforts to damp down inflation? We'll see. I don't know.
Because the administration has responded to the boomflation or inflation story, pointing to supply chains. Is there thinking on the street that supply chains, if solved and when solved, can answer inflation as long as the Fed also moves? Is there confidence anywhere? Now, this is a terrible question to ask on the day of a war in Europe, but inflation is what's coming home here long before the tanks can.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's become a big political problem. Supply chain issues undoubtedly have been a problem. The thing is, the demand level we're seeing across the board means that those supply chain problems haven't gotten fixed. I mean, over time, for sure. For example, let's talk about semiconductors. Semiconductors is probably the one area that everybody knows is a big problem, right? It's really restrained automobile production. It's restrained the production of electronic products of all kinds, et cetera. There are new semiconductor plants being built in Texas and Ohio, Arizona. It is interesting to me that the Democrats want to push through a bill called the America Competes Act. That's the House version, which would give $52 billion to semiconductor companies to improve the availability of supply and to encourage U.S. production. One of the problems, obviously, is that the biggest semiconductor maker of high-end chips is in Taiwan. What happens if China invades Taiwan? There's a real, you talk about a supply chain problem, that would be drastic. Well, thankfully, that company is building a facility now in the U.S. What's sort of stupid, I think, we don't need taxpayers to spend $52 billion to encourage what is already going on. These facilities will be coming online, John, and there are replicas in many other industries too, which will that will help. But it's not going to be in the next 3 months or 6 months. It's probably going to be in the next year to 2 years. Liz, and I would think that's true a lot of places, by the way.
Liz Peek of The Hill of Fox News, much on Fox Business, reporting on the markets today. In comparison, I remind all of you that Woodrow Wilson closed the markets for 4 months when war broke out in Europe in 1914. We're ahead of that. The markets are not closed. However, we're going to turn to where Wall Street exists right now in New York and its recovery. The pandemic is not gone, but there's reason to believe it's lifting, and back to work is part of the conversation. Liz Peek, on the 100th anniversary of WOR 710 AM in New York City, my flagship. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.